The fourth case of the day, Burke versus Johnson. Mr. Olson.
Judge Plum, if I had known I was going to see you again this soon, I would have brought my easel pad. May it please the court, my name is Jeff Olson. I'm here representing Reginald Burke. The Wisconsin statute that guarantees prisoners sentence credit for time spent in jail before their sentencing on a particular crime also gives prison officials de novo jurisdiction to grant that sentence credit if the court doesn't do it when it passes sentence. The plaintiff's operant claim that's left in this case is that in the spring of 2000, when he was in prison, the Department of Corrections officials who were in charge of doing that, in his case, exercising that de novo jurisdiction, essentially dropped the ball and were deliberately indifferent to the fact that he was on track to spend more time in prison than the law allowed. And by their deliberate indifference, he did, in fact, spend more time in prison than the law allowed in the year 2000. Now, the case was dismissed based on the Rooker-Feldman doctrine in the district court, the theory being that since the plaintiff had raised the issue of sentence credit in the state court system and lost before he invoked the de novo jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections officials, that decision was the kind of decision that gets insulated through the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. We file a brief arguing that that was inappropriate, and in response, the state has conceded that the Rooker-Feldman doctrine does not apply in this case, but they now argue that the doctrine of preclusion should apply. I want to tell the court today that the doctrine of preclusion does not apply to bar the plaintiff's claims here for three reasons. Number one, the defense of preclusion was waived by the defense in this case. We pointed out in our brief that it was only raised a year after the deadline for dispositive motions in the trial court, and when it was raised, the defense either intentionally or negligently stated that they had just discovered the state court proceedings upon which the defense of preclusion was based by them. In fact, those state court proceedings had been the subject of earlier disputes in the district court about whether the plaintiff had exhausted his administrative remedies. And many of the same documents that the defense claimed to have just discovered a year after the deadline for dispositive motions had been placed on the record by the plaintiff in his efforts to show he had exhausted his dispositive motions. The existence of those state court proceedings and their resolution against the plaintiff was a matter that was clearly in the record. But more significantly, I think, the defense of preclusion is an affirmative defense. It has to be pleaded. And in this case, it was never made a part of the answer and never made a part of any amended answer. The second reason the doctrine of preclusion doesn't apply is that the issue in this case is different from the issue that the circuit court dealt with. The state circuit court dealt with the issue of, well, it's the issue with, the state circuit court dealt with the issue of whether sentence credit was appropriate. We're not here to litigate whether sentence credit was appropriate, because the Department of Corrections officials eventually got it right, and they did give Mr. Burke his sentence credit. It was in a subsequent sentence, but he received credit for the jail time that's at issue in this case. The issue in this case is whether in the year 2000 they were deliberately indifferent to his right to sentence credit in the exercise of their de novo jurisdiction to review the issue. Now, in terms of defining what the issue is, the defense brief gets it right at one point and wrong at two points. Where they get it right is in the very first paragraph of their argument at page 2, where they say, Burke has brought a claim for cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment against prison officials for a delay in granting him credit for time served in jail prior to his sentencing in case number 96 CF-226. That's the issue in this court, and that's correctly framed in the defense brief when they explain why they're giving up on the Rooker-Feldman argument. But then it's wrongly stated a couple of other points in the defense brief. Just above that, in the summary of the argument on page 2, the defense says, Burke is once again challenging the amount of jail time with which he should be credited. That's just not true. We're not challenging the amount of jail time or whether he should have got it. He's already got it. We're just challenging the timing of it. We're saying that it was deliberately indifferent to delay as long as they did. Also, the issue is misstated on page 6 of the defense brief where they say, Burke is attempting to do the same thing by way of this 42 U.S.C. section 1983 action against the appellees that he did in the state courts. That is, Mr. Burke is once again challenging the amount of jail time with which he should be credited. That's just not accurate. We're not challenging the amount of jail time. We're saying that when you have de novo jurisdiction to look at this issue of jail credit and you delay it to the point that it becomes moot and the guy does more time than he should have done because of your delay and your deliberate indifference, that's cruel and unusual punishment.
If a mistake is made, and this is a fairly complicated situation, I think, you know, a sentence and then a credit and then he's out and he's arrested again and resentenced and all this sort of stuff. If it's just a mistake, and if that's all this is that a deliberate indifference Eighth Amendment claim?
The burden on us to prove deliberate indifference is a much higher burden than proving simple negligence. If all we do is prove simple negligence or an honest mistake that maybe doesn't even involve the want of due care, then we will lose on that issue when we are remanded to the circuit court or to the district court, but we have the right to make our showing there and to present our evidence of deliberate indifference, which we have.
What really is the evidence of deliberate indifference? It was difficult to figure out what the credit was supposed to be here.
Not at all. The year 2001, I think, anyway, when Ward McCautry got the issue, he wrote to Burke and said, we can do this if you send us some documentation of the time you spent in jail, such as a jail booking slip. That's in a letter that's in the record. 3 days later, Mr. Burke sent him the jail booking slip, and immediately after that, in December of 2001, the corrections officials granted him jail credit. It was a simple thing for them to do. It's frankly inexplicable why it wasn't done in 2000. It doesn't seem... I'm not worried about this case when we get back on the merits. I'm not worried about being able to make a good, strong showing of deliberate indifference.
But you did tell us that later he did get this credit on a different sentence.
That's right. But he got credit for the jail time that he should have got in the spring of 2000.
It
would have resulted in his earlier release.
Does he have to give back that credit that he received?
I don't know.
I mean...
But I am prepared to show that he was injured very severely by not getting the credit that he was entitled to in the spring of the year 2000. Far more so than anything that could be said that he was made up for in being let out in 2001. He lost his custody of his children because he was unable to attend court proceedings that he would have been able to attend if he would have been able to be released in 2000. I'd like to reserve my time. Thank
Surely,
you.
Surely, Mr. Wilson.
May it please the court. My name is Adrian Dressel Velasquez, and I'm an assistant attorney general for the state of Wisconsin, appearing for the defendant's appellees in this case. Mr. Burke's argument is based on the theory that the Wisconsin state court decisions, which denied Mr. Burke any sentence credit, are not relevant to his federal claim. He claims that his federal action is focused solely on the sentence credit decisions of the DOC, which he claims had de novo review. And he's claiming are independent of the state court decisions, and therefore neither the Rooker-Feldman doctrine nor issue preclusion applies. If the DOC had the authority to independently grant Mr. Burke sentence credit, the defendants would agree with this argument. However, upon careful review of Wisconsin's sentence credit statute, which is section 973.155, it is clear that the DOC had no authority to grant Mr. Burke sentence credit. Therefore, the state court decisions are controlling in this matter, and Mr. Burke's federal action was correctly dismissed under the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. The state acknowledges that we conceded the Rooker-Feldman doctrine does not apply in this case in its brief. However, the Rooker-Feldman doctrine can't be waived. It's a subject matter jurisdiction question, which the court should be looking at on as a very first issue.
So, originally you conceded, you argued Rooker-Feldman, you won in front of Judge Herndon on Rooker-Feldman.
Correct.
Then here you conceded Rooker-Feldman doesn't apply.
In our brief,
in your brief,
conceded it didn't apply
on
after issue reading the Exxon Mobil decision, which severely limited the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. However, upon more careful review of both the sentence credit and the Exxon Mobil decision, we have reversed our decision and believe that the Rooker-Feldman doctrine does apply. This case was appropriately dismissed.
When did the state take that position?
The state took this position, honestly, it was not last night, it was last week. I was not the attorney who wrote the brief. I was assigned to this case on oral argument about 2 weeks ago.
Whoever wrote the brief didn't want to come down here today.
Yeah, respectfully, there's only one attorney general.
That's
for the state
correct.
Of Illinois. Excuse me, for the state of Wisconsin.
That's correct.
And for the state of Illinois. And it would, if that was the timeline, it would behoove the attorney general to inform the court and counsel of that.
I agree. However, the Rooker-Feldman doctrine is a subject matter question. It is a question that this court should be looking at. Mr. Burke relies on subsection 5 of the Wisconsin sentence credit statute to argue that he had the right, in his words, to take a second bite of the sentence credit apple by petitioning the DOC for sentence credit. Subsection 5 reads, in relevant part, if this section has not been applied in sentencing to any person who is in custody, the person may petition the department to be given credit under this section. However, in this case, the section was applied. The judge at both the original sentencing, which was in March of 1997, as well as when he amended the sentence, which was in May of 1999, specifically made a finding that 0 days of sentence credit were due.
Can I ask you this, as long as you're changing all these positions here? Do you no longer think that issue preclusion would carry the day for you?
Issue preclusion would carry the day for us. And it would carry the day.
You're not going to withdraw that part of your...
No, it would carry the day because the Wisconsin state court decisions are controlling. This issue has already been litigated in state court. He can't litigate the issue again.
Well, the state court never really decided whether anybody was deliberately indifferent here, and as opposed to just making a mistake.
The state court's decision was solely on sentence credit.
Yeah,
and
but
it ruled that he wasn't due
any
sentence credit.
The issue here is that there was some, I don't know if somebody could prove this or not, but the claim is that there was malice or deliberate indifference, and they didn't care about this guy, and they just let him sit in prison longer than he should have. That's what the claim is here.
Correct.
What state court decided that issue, as opposed to the arithmetic computation of whether sentences titled jail credit 120?
In order for Mr. Burke to prove deliberate indifference, he would need to show that he was entitled to sentence credit. without showing that he's entitled to sentence credit, there couldn't have been any deliberate indifference for denying him sentence credit. The district court could not grant Mr. Burke any relief without finding that Mr. Burke was entitled to a sentence credit. However, since the DOC had no statutory authority to grant Mr. Burke a sentence credit, the only way the district court could make such a finding would be by reviewing and reversing the state court decisions. Under either issue preclusion or the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, the district court would be unable to make that requisite finding. Mr. Burke cannot dispute that he is a state court loser on the sentence credit issue. The Rooker-Feldman doctrine applies because the state court judgments are controlling. His federal case complains of injuries caused by the state court judgment, that he wasn't given any sentence credit. And these decisions were rendered before the district court proceedings commenced and invites district court review and rejection of those judgments. Therefore, Mr. Burke's federal action fits the confines of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine as espoused in ExxonMobil, and Mr. Burke's case was correctly dismissed. Again, if we want to go through issue preclusion, that also applies. However, as a subject matter question, the court just didn't have subject matter at all for this case, and it was appropriately dismissed. If we want to take that the state conceded and is able to concede the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, which it can't, you can't waive subject matter jurisdiction, issue preclusion does still apply. The district court must make a finding in order for Mr. Burke to be granted relief that he was entitled to sentence credit. The only way they can do that is by going through an issue that has already been litigated. There aren't any further questions.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Dressel.
Thank you.
Less questions. Mr. Olson.
The words of Section 973.155 sub 5 include the phrase, if this section has not been applied, and go on to say that if it has not been applied, then the Department of Corrections can apply it. And that's what Mr. Burke asked for here, and that's what he got, but too late. He got it in 2001. Now, those words mean one of two things. They mean either what he says they mean, if the issue of sentence credit hasn't been mentioned in the circuit court, or they mean if sentence credit hasn't been granted in the circuit court. The Department of Corrections clearly operates under the second construction. And there's no authority here for the first construction. The Department of Corrections clearly proceeds on the idea that if sentence credit hasn't been granted in the circuit court, we can grant it, because that's exactly what happened in 2001. So we've got no authority that the Department of Corrections is foreclosed from granting sentence credit if the district court has ever considered the issue. And we've got established practice that the Department of Corrections can grant sentence credit as long as the circuit court hasn't done so. That's what the statute means. The Department of Corrections can exercise that de novo jurisdiction I was talking about if the circuit court hasn't granted sentence credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.